Okay, our next talk just before the coffee break is by Diego Castaneda, and he will tell us about modeling observable properties of rapidly rotating stars.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a bit of how we're trying to model these observable properties of rapidly rotating stars. It is not just for the B case. We have been working on actually on mostly on A-type stars, but we think we can extend this to more broader type of star. And this is just like a very brief comment about, well, it is important for B stars because they happen to be the most rapidly, or some of the most rapidly rotating stars, part of these early type super fast rapid rotators. But they're more complex, as we know, and we will probably be seeing through the conference. And even just distinguishing the stellar surface from the disk, it's difficult. So we believe that realistic modeling of the central star, excluding all the possible interactions, just trying to model properly the central star, may be important to understand the whole BE phenomenon. But rotation comes with a bunch of issues. Principally, there's a theoretical complication that put into the most simple name is just that it's harder to model a star that is rotating compared to a non-rotating star. And also, there are observational difficulties, mostly because the deduced values of fundamental properties like the luminosity and effective temperature, they depend strongly on the angle of inclination. So this HR diagram that I put here is just to show you that, well, there are three non-rotating stars. There are these crosses, and then there is a bunch of models for a rotating 12 solar mass star for which rotation is increasing in this direction, and each curve is one model viewed at different inclinations. So you can be in a broad space in this HR diagram. So you cannot really tell the intrinsic properties like the actual luminosity or actual effective temperature just from normal observations, to put it in a way. So normally we would have for, as is the case for a non-rotating star, we would have a spectral energy distribution, and from it you would have some lines that, and hopefully deduce some projected rotational velocity of V sine I. And you can have as well some broadband photometry and observed luminosity being just the integral of the SED over the whole wavelength space using distance and reddening properties. But it is not enough if you want to understand what's happening with the rotating star. So in just to, I guess, clarify some notation of how I refer to some of these fundamental properties. When I say the deduced luminosity is the integral of the flux of the observed SED, and the deduced effective temperature is obtained by applying, so this is one way to obtain it, by applying non-rotating color effective temperature relations to the observed SED. So if you see the plot, this is one model of a rotating star viewed at three different inclinations. So the deduced luminosity and the deduced effective temperature will change, or will be dependent on each SED. So, and it is just with those values, it is almost impossible to relate those to the actual luminosity, which is the total energy coming out of the star per unit time, or the actual effective temperature that we define just as the luminosity divided by the surface area times the Stefan-Boltzmann constant to the 1/4. So we're trying to create a gap, a bridge that will join these observed properties to the what we call the real properties. So interferometry helps a lot, especially because you can determine the inclination and the deformation caused by rotation in an ideal case. We usually characterize this deformation something called what we call shape, or what I will refer as shape, which is basically just the ratio of the polar radius divided by the equatorial radius. So this constrains a lot the possible models that you can use in order to explain what you see from a rotating star, but can we still do a better job of modeling now that we have this information? Well, there is something else that we started using, is that Dupree in 2011 showed that some properties of rapidly rotating stars, particularly the effective temperature as function of latitude, were proportional between models that had the same shape. So effectively, what you have is that if you have two stellar models of rapidly rotating stars at some latitude, if you were to take the surface effective temperature and take a ratio, it would be constant for any inclination, any co-latitude or latitude. And using the fact that, well, if the star happens to have the same shape, the radii is also going to be proportional between these two models, then that made us believe that maybe observable properties will scale in a way that we could just describe similarly to this ratio. And so we went ahead and we calculated a bunch of models of different masses, but that had the same shape, so different rotation rates with different masses. And we went ahead and we found this constant for the observed effective temperature and observed luminosity, and saw how much would your constant deviate from being constant. So we just fixed the ratio that we found for different inclinations. And we saw, well, how far are we if we are to scale from a star of two solar masses to three, and there are some others. And well, this is a fairly low mass for B stars, but this could be extended for higher masses, higher mass cases, because it works as well. And basically, the biggest change in this constant is when you have, the biggest difference in mass, and it happens to be around 2%. And this is similar for higher mass models. So, and how can this be helpful if you want to model these rapidly rotating stars? Well, we wanted to see some cases, and Vega was one of those, because Vega happens to be, well, historically important because it's Vega, and also because there is some issue trying to understand there's suggestion that it's a rapidly rotating star because of its high luminosity. It's unusually large radius, and also because the weak lines seems to show a profile that does not fit a non-rotating star case. So there have been interferometric studies that indicated, yes, Vega is rotating fast, around 270 kilometers per second, but then independently, spectroscopic analysis of the weak lines particularly determined that it's rotating, but maybe it's not rotating as fast. So we thought that this would be maybe an interesting case to go take a bunch of models and try to see if we could like find a place in between with what we have. And what we have is this reference set of models are full 2D rotating models for which we don't necessarily or directly apply von Zipel's law, because the relationship between this effective temperature, the surface effective temperature, and effective gravity is derived from a gray atmosphere relation between the surface temperature and the effective temperature at each latitude. So we then selected from the literature a bunch of parameters that people agree with mostly about what they think is happening with Vega. So a deduced effective temperature of 9550 Kelvin from DSED, an inclination of 5 degrees that is deduced from interferometry, a Vsin I of 21.9 kilometers per second from just line profiles, and an equatorial radius of 2.728 solar radius from combining interferometry and parallax. And then this polar radius based on the model they fit from interferometry to get the interferometric observation they found. So then what we do basically is we have models that are zero age mean sequence models that one of those can have the same shape as the one observed from Vega. And basically we create a methodology or an algorithm using these scaling relations that based on what you expect, so what you deduce as Vega's deduced effective temperature, inclination, observed beta and I, and shape, you work yourself back to what the reference star model needs to be scaled by to get those values. And that essentially gives you, in the end, a scaled model that has the information that we would think is the Vega model. So you can have the surface radius, surface effective temperature, effective gravity, rotational velocity, all of that as function of cold attitude. And this is, well, very important, an actual luminosity and actual effective temperature so that you can place your rotating star in the HR diagram. So this is pretty great, but like, how does it compare with what you would observe? Well, we took some of the most recent Chera array interferometric observations of Vega, and we also created synthetic visibilities for this scaled model and saw how well it compared. And that this is something that we're working with Jason Offenberg. And basically, we do a pretty good job at reproducing what the interferometry would measure. There are some particularities that apparently we're not sure if they're part of the observations or the star, but compared to previous results, this is pretty good. We're still working on improving this just because we chose one set of parameters, but there's a lot of uncertainty into like every parameter. So we still have some room to play with in this process. But we also compare how well the SCD will compare to a standard Vega SCD by Bowling and Gillen 2004. And we also do a pretty good job, especially in the UV, where you have all this hot pole flux coming towards you. And then we also try to compare a bunch of the weak lines that spectroscopic groups have been considering. And having into account that we normalize the equivalent width so that we will only compare the rotational aspects of the line, because there are some population issues that if you happen to have a different metallicity or population of certain elements, then the line may be deeper or not. But we renormalize that, take into account there are weak lines, they're on the linear part of the curve of growth, so anything associated with this renormalization could be associated with population or number density issues, but not just with rotation. And we do a pretty good job. There are still some issues in some places in the line, but it's not everywhere. So we have some lines that fit better than some others, but we're pretty confident that this is maybe something that could work in the long run. So, and just as a summary, if you happen to have, like at your end, interferometry and traditional observations of rapid rotators, you can have the possibility to test this, what we believe are more realistic stellar models. And then using this scaling relationships, you should be able to have new surface stellar, new surface models, surface properties to recreate these observables and just, I guess, without having to model every single time a new star and just do it more easily. And for this particular case, that is now why I'm here, maybe there's an opportunity to use what we do or the way we do this modeling to test the rotational aspects of the central object in the B phenomenon. And that's pretty much it.
So you may or may not be aware that Vega is the first of a potentially large class of intermediate mass stars in which very weak magnetic fields have started to be detected.
Right.
So in the particular case of Vega, the field is about 10 Gauss at the surface of the star. And the analyses that have been done up until now, and Vega is the most sophisticated of those, actually yield an observed rotational period for Vega. And so it would be very interesting to know your equatorial radius and your
right.
implied rotational velocity to see whether those jive.
Yes, yeah, so basically this magnetic field analysis is agrees better with the spectroscopic analysis, so a lower rotation rate. But essentially what I guess we're still starting this project of testing, like how far can we go in each parameter to see how well we fit everything. But yeah, that's also part of like the game.
Any other questions?
You mentioned that you, in your modeling, you allow there to be a freedom, not necessarily follow the von Zipel law with latitude. Could you say a little bit more about how you choose that? Because von Zipel follows directly from the assumption that the flux will scale with effective gravity.
Right.
So what do you use instead as a more general condition?
So I guess we agree with von Zipel when it's not near a critical rotation where things start to get deformed enough that you cannot describe the surface as a Roche potential or something similar. But the idea is that our surface temperature can be related using this gray atmosphere relation to the effective surface, effective temperature, and the model will give you the effective gravity. So our T effective, G effective relation obeys what the model tells it should obey. But it's not a strict relation of von Zipel's equation, basically, is dictated by the model itself.
Okay, I guess I'll talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand the difference there.
Yeah.
A gray atmosphere model, if it's a planar model, locally planar, should just be depending on the flux that's coming from below. So, but anyway, we'll talk about that.
Sure.
Okay, one quick one. I'm trying to bring us back on schedule, not on your expense. So last quick question.
How might your results change if your rotating models take into account differential rotation?
So we... Right. So we have tested a few models, especially for Alpha Ophiuchus, that is also another star that has been observed interferometrically, but it's in a more evolved state. So we have trying to use this scaling relationships with differential rotation included. And I guess the numbers change, but the scaling, as long as you have models that do not differ from each other by a lot of mass, they still hold. So I guess there should be maybe a more careful study of what are exactly the differences between the solid body rotating ones and the differentially rotating ones. But as long as you don't have something that is crazy in terms of differential rotation, this should still hold.
Thank you. Let's thank Diego one more time.